Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Live from the Nasdaq Market 8 on a day where the S&P 500 closes at a record high. This is Fast Money. Here's what's on tap tonight. Housing handout. In tonight's State of the Union, President Biden will lay out a plan to help make housing more affordable. Tax credits, incentives, and a push to boost supply. The impact on the sector and the challenge this could present to the Fed. Plus, the chips keep charging. NVIDIA topping $900 a share today, climbing another 3+% for the year. It is up more than 85%. I can't keep this up, right? We'll debate that. And later, Netflix putting Iron Mike into their sports ring. Another weighty move higher for Novo Nordisk. Rivian all revved up after its big reveal. I'm Melissa Lee, coming to you live from Studio B at the Nasdaq on the desk tonight. Tim Seymour, Bonu and Eisen, Dan Nathan, and Guy Adami. And we start off with the countdown to the State of the Union. President Biden expected to announce a slew of policy proposals at his address tonight. On the agenda, a call to increase the minimum corporate tax rate to 28% and the rate for billionaires to 25%. He's also looking to up taxes on share buybacks. Also, a crackdown on junk fees on everything from airlines to credit cards to health care, as well as so-called shrinkflation. But what really caught our attention, a proposed $10,000 tax credit for first-time home buyers in an attempt to boost the housing market. Could that actually heat up that market? Let's bring in Diana Olok, who has been diving into this one. Diana.
Well, Melissa, housing affordability, as you know, is still near a record low. Just 38% of both new and existing homes sold in the fourth quarter of last year were affordable to families earning the U.S. median income, which is $96,300. Now, home prices in January also hit another record high and showed the biggest annual gain in a year. So the Biden administration is unveiling a plan to tackle home affordability. And first, they're urging Congress to pass a $10,000 first-time home buyer tax credit. Now, you may remember during the financial crisis, Congress passed a tax credit that ran from 2008 to 2010. It was $7,500 and acted as an interest-free loan that had to be paid back over 15 years. Now, the Biden credit, though, is not just for buyers, but also for people who might want to sell their starter homes. That is, those lower cost homes, which are desperately needed in this market. Biden is also calling on Congress to pass a mortgage relief credit. That's $5,000 annually for 2 years, which would be the equivalent of lowering today's mortgage rate by 1.5 percentage points on the median price home. So around 7% to 5.5%. He's also pledging to build and renovate more than 2 million homes, as well as lower rental costs by expanding the low-income housing tax credit. And that, of course, is for apartment developers. Melissa, a lot on the plate.
Yeah, I'm just curious, Diana, according to the people you speak with, is 5.5%, would that facilitate, grease a lot more transactions?
I think it would. I mean, that's what the home buyers say they're buying down mortgage rates to. When you talk to the builders and they tell us about all these rate buy downs, it's always down into that 5.5% range. And that tends to get the buyers into the house, whether it's just the affordability or the idea that they don't have a 7 handle and they have a 5 handle makes them feel better. But I think the tax credit's really interesting. I was talking to the NAR's chief economist, and he said that in 2009, that tax credit, that $7,500, boosted home sales by 20%. In 1 year. That's something.
Wow, that's a lot. Diana, thank you. Sure. Diana Olok. Imagine what Fed Chair Jay Powell will think when, if transactions were up 20% because of this. I mean, that's just sort of a side thing. It's great for home buyers, for people looking to buy a home. But in terms of the impact on the economy, there are a lot of implications here.
There's huge implications, especially when you consider that the Federal Reserve in the past, especially after the financial crisis, was targeting housing prices and the wealth effect that comes with it. They're talking in the stock market. So the flip side is also true. We have an enormous bubble out there in terms of assets. There's financial liquidity everywhere. And this isn't making the Fed's job any easier. As someone that's thought the XHB and a lot of the housing exposed stuff was toast, and mentioned that we had seen the highs. I've totally been wrong on this. The dynamic around the supply and some of the demographics that are working. Obviously, you also have baby boomers going in for the second home. I know that seems a little bit greedy at this point when people are looking for the first. But there's a lot of demand on the housing market, and there's not a lot of supply. And a $10,000 tax credit in and of itself doesn't do it. I think the buyer-seller dynamics are interesting. The government, as a contractor who's fixing up houses and flipping them, scares the you-know-what out of me. So it's important news. And again, if you look at the XHB, it's been almost a 60% move off that market pivot from October 26th.
It's amazing. Tim hit the nail on the head in terms of supply. I mean, you can throw all the tax credits you want. That's not going to fix the supply side of the equation, which we've talked about for a while. And I will say that last year, I think we were universally sort of loving the home builders for a myriad of different reasons. But look at the move over the last, 9 months or so, in names like Toll Brothers and Pulte Homes. They're trading like some of these technology stocks. I mean, put up a chart over the last year and a half and you will see. I mean, these things have gone vertical in ways that these stocks shouldn't do that. So I understand the want to do this. I understand the want to sort of buy votes and the political expedience of this entire thing. I don't think it does anything to solve the problem. And to Tim's point, it makes a Fed's job, which is difficult, that much more.
Yeah, no, it is interesting that this is obviously coming out of the State of the Union. This is an awesome time for him to kind of frame what his kind of next 4 years might be. And if you think about where he's having problems right now, this is President Biden, it's with maybe a first-time home buyer. I think all of us can think about, I think Tim has been on this point about financial conditions and the wealth effect and the, we're getting to a point here where you're going to be able to connect a lot of dots where if a couple things go wrong in the economy, we're going to see lots of things come down. I think the whole issue about the lack of supply in the housing market can get fixed by a good old-fashioned recession or the unemployment rate getting above 4% or interest rates staying higher for longer, some of those sorts of things. So to me, I just don't think this sort of credit is like any cause for alarm about reflating a bubble, because I don't think the bubble really exists in those first-time homes right now.
I mean, I'm going to jump in here and I'm going to echo a lot of the same sentiments in terms of the supply side constraints. That really is what has fueled that XHB and those home builders and home builder adjacent type of stocks to the moves that, to Guy's point, are beginning to get slightly concerning. You know what? I do think that in terms of first time home buyers, this situation kind of resonates with everyone. It is essentially the American dream. So I can understand the political type of support that something like this might garner. With that said, in terms of mechanics, even if you are buying that rate down at that 5.5%, keep in mind that a ton of the existing supply still exists between that 2.75% to 3.75%. So that's still not incentive enough for the supply side holders to release said supply.
Unless you have to. I mean, there's a whole cohort of people out there who have to sell for whatever reason, because they've had a family, because somebody has died in their family, because they need the liquidity. And maybe this is enough to get them to, offset the new rate that they're going into on the new property that they're going to buy.
It will, but at least Bonwin's referencing the dynamic around where, look, there's a lot of sweetheart mortgages out there that people are hanging into, but they are going to roll off. And it doesn't bode well for the housing market in the future, both in terms of velocity of sales action and just where the affordability dynamics are. And I think that will then take down prices. Again, if you can't go out and get a mortgage over a house, essentially in terms of monthly kind of burn rate costs you now twice what it did 4 years ago, 3 years ago. That's not great for house prices, even when all the other things for the industry. And that's been my view. But again, back to like a Williams-Sonoma or a Masco or a Vulcan Materials. These are stocks that have not only moved in line with the sector, they've exceeded the sector. And the question is, when you look at the multiples on a lot of these stocks, they're not terrible. They're also companies that are actually getting through a lot of supply constraint dynamics, a lot of post-COVID. Again, I call this like the delayed normalization of the economy. And I think these are places where I think you can still play. Williams-Sonoma is a name we like. I know Guy shops for a couple particular items there, and it happens to be a particular.
Well,
probably
the
good Dutch ovens.
Yeah, the Dutch oven's probably on
they
sale
have
right now.
A wonderful array of them.
They do. And I mean, Tim makes fun of the Dutch oven. I mean, that's some of my best cooking is done in the Dutch oven.
I bet it is.
Well, Williams-Sonoma reports on March 13th. So next week, Tim mentions valuation. Trades at 16.5 times, which is not ridiculous. They may not have the earnings growth that people want. But even with the move we've seen, it's still a reasonable stock. Of course, the problem is we've seen some pretty ridiculous moves both up and down in this name. So Williams-Sonoma specifically, if you've enjoyed this run, given some of the nuttiness we've seen in this sector, I mean, you got to do something in earnings next week. I think if you're long and doing nothing, to me, that's the wrong plan of attack.
All right. For more on the nation's housing shortfall, let's bring in Skylar Olson, Zillow's chief economist. Skylar, great to have you with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Will this work? Will this actually facilitate inventory onto the market? Will it facilitate sales, do you think?
You know, in a market that is so short on supply, we honestly could, you know, really could use all the help that we could possibly get. I think, you know, what's going on right now, or this proposal that's, you know, the White House is setting forward here, is a lot of incentives to, say, a first-time homebuyer to move forward. You know, I don't know that they need those incentives to move forward, but if you size, you know, 10 grand, it's kind of like compensating you or letting you handle the 50 basis points mortgage swings that can change your buying power by as much, if not a little bit more, that we've seen happen as recently as, you know, over a month. So I think it really could incentivize a lot of buyers to move forward and could, you know, spur forward sales. But we need those new listings to be there in the first place. We do have pent-up sellers, so these incentives for someone to provide a starter house could do a bit, but we do need a lot more to get back to pre-pandemic normals. We're still down a big shortfall. And then if you think over just building, how much we're shortfall and just how much more in the housing stock do we need? Mm-hmm. 2 million is ambitious for what we've been able to, you know, provide, certainly in the starter home space. But our shortfall is more around maybe 4 million, 4.3, if you think of all those households who live with non-relatives that really cannot afford to pop out right now.
I'm wondering, how technically would this work as far as you know, in terms of somebody, let's say I'm a first-time home buyer, and I see this tax credit, and I think that that's amazing. It's going to bring the mortgage rate down to equivalent to 5.5%. But I have to still go in and get qualified. Do I get qualified against a 7% mortgage rate, and therefore the affordability factor isn't solved for me until I get that tax credit after the transaction?
Yes, I think so. A couple of things to kind of clarify here. Mm-hmm. It will amount to dropping your, you know, I think the press release or the fact sheet that came out clarified that it would be the equivalent of dropping your mortgage rate for 1.5 percentage points, but just for the first 2 years. So that's kind of similar to, say, other popular mortgage products out there, like a 2-1 buy down, where you can get your seller to pay for the same kind of thing, right? Your mortgage rate falls for those first 2 years. Now, because it is a tax credit, though, you're not going to get it at the time, you know, or built into the mortgage as you pay. It will come later. Now, you know, hopefully, and if we think about someone who has the potential to become a home buyer, they're generally someone who has been saving for a while, so maybe they can carry it on until they get that tax credit. So for that marginal buyer, you know, it probably will still have that beneficial impact. But when you think about, like, how to size these numbers and what it might mean to you as a buyer, mortgage rate fluctuations, you know, are a big deal to, you know, on scale, in other words, with this kind of benefit. So as an active shopper, be sure to be watching, be ready for the inventory that's available, and get pre-approved to figure out what you can't afford and what this kind of benefit would mean for you in your area. Because in expensive housing markets, it'll mean a lot less.
Skylar Bonawan-Eisen here. Thanks so much for joining us. So you drilled down on something that I find very interesting. So speaking about this marginal buyer and how there will be some fluctuation in terms of mortgage rates a few years out, can you speak to what might be the second or third order effects in terms of default rates that need to be considered as we're trying to find ways and engineer ways for people to stretch to get into these first-time homes that might just be at the brink of affordability?
Yeah, so if I'm, you know, understanding your question right, what you're saying is if we incentivize a bunch of people in order to become first-time homebuyers that maybe otherwise would not have been able to, do I introduce a lot of risk into the system and will experience pain later? You know, I think when we're thinking about credit markets and we're thinking about access to home ownership, there's a lot of space to improve how this process works. So, for example, there's probably folks who have let's call it like their fundamental credit worthiness is worthy, right? But the way that we calculate credit just might not account for that. So, for example, credit scores have not traditionally included ready payments of rent, right? Or successful payments of rent over time. You'll get dinged, you know, when you don't pay or for an eviction, right? But that successful payment signal is completely missing. So there is room to provide access to homeownership to more groups. And then if we just think about what is the big barrier right now for a lot of folks? I mean, that down payment and the change and the impact of that affordability, it has happened regardless to those individuals. So I think it is a challenge, and we will, over time, kind of see fewer people become homeowners and more people turn to rentals for that reason.
Right. Skylar, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it. Skylar Olson.
Yeah, thank you.
So we outlined before that in addition to this, we're also expecting President Biden to speak a lot about other things, including something we talked about yesterday, like drug pricing. All those fees could impact the credit card industry. Where are some of the sectors that you'd be looking to tomorrow for potential impact?
Well, it's pretty clear that pharma is always a target, and it's pretty clear that also energy at times are always places that are wrought with, you know, kind of political undercurrents. And I think we're going to see that. I think in the case of the banking sector, what we've been getting over the last few days, and it's been coming from different corners of the government and policy, is that banks probably have less of a target on their back than they did a year ago, right around SVB. And that's part of this breakout. As we talked about the housing sector, I was just looking to see what some of the mortgage servicing companies and some of the consumer credit companies, you'd think they'd be bouncing in a big way, but they're also reflective of consumer credit concerns that haven't really, you know, hit the fan, as they say.
They'll talk about the billions and billions of dollars that entered the profits of the energy. I'm not privy to this, but, you know, my sense is that will come out. So there'll be a bullseye on energy, as there typically is. But don't underestimate, I think, consumer products, because he actually talked about this around the Super Bowl, how packages are getting smaller.
Shrinkflation.
I don't like saying that because, you know.
Packages?
Excuse me?
How packages are getting
smaller. Like your cereal boxes, Tim, for example. I'm not really sure what you're talking about, but a 16-ounce box of Cheerios is now 12-ounce, but you're paying the same amount of money.
Right.
So there's obviously, what they're saying is, listen, we want to keep the price point the same. This is how we're doing it. You want a 16-ounce box? We're going to jack it up by 25%. I think consumer products, whether they realize it or not, they have a bullseye on their back, too.
That's interesting. All right, we've got an earnings alert on Broadcom on the move in the after-hour session right now. The semi stock reporting a beat on the top and the bottom line for the first quarter. Christina Partsenevelis has got the details. Hey, Christina.
Hello. Well, expectations were high going into Broadcom's results, with the stock up, what, over 50% just in the last 3 months. And although the company, like you mentioned, beat Q4 earnings, they did not update their fiscal year or full year 2025 revenue guidance of $50 billion, $30 billion, which should come from the semiconductor business, $20 billion from software. So in the quarter, revenue from their semi business came in a little lighter than expected, but was offset by strength in software, which is what you're seeing on your screen. Recall, Broadcom acquired VMware for roughly $69 billion about 18 months ago, helping drive that software growth. Broadcom also benefits from the AI upswing, given it makes these custom silicon chips that are often used in AI infrastructure, but they're still exposed to other cyclical segments like storage, networking, etc. And so that dynamic is expected to be discussed on this call that started maybe about a minute ago, especially since expectations were so high going into this report. And also high for Marvell's stock, faring much worse despite a new $3 billion stock buyback program. It's the weak Q1 outlook that is causing the sell-off. Management saying they are forecasting soft demand impacting consumer, carrier infrastructure, and enterprise networking in the near term. But they promise those revenue declines will only occur in Q1, this current quarter. Investors a little unsure, hence the stock drop.
All right, Christina, thank you. Christina Partsenevelis. These two stocks in particular were mentioned in a Mizuho report saying that there could be an air pocket in chipland, that there's a lot of near-term risks here associated with the sector. Obviously, NVIDIA was among them. But the setup here, stocks, massive run going into it, and in line or missing is just not acceptable.
Yeah, and it'll be up tomorrow. They can't get enough of these things. I mean, you know what I'm saying? So, like, if you see them down in the morning, that's a perfect opportunity to make money, Mel. Red in the morning means green
so
in the afternoon.
You're a buyer.
No, all right, let's hold on here.
Well, I'm just listening to what you're saying.
Really, you're an opportunity.
There's no sarcasm.
You need like a button.
It might likely be down in the morning and up in the afternoon. I mean, we just talked about the supply-demand dynamic in the housing market. There seems to be a thing here. But, like, I'm just looking at the estimates, and I'm looking at this current fiscal year, you know, trading at 30 times earnings, 13 times sales. You know, we're looking at mid-teens at best, you know, expected, you know, earnings growth here, better than expected sales growth, but they're not beating those expectations. So this is something we're going to see at some point this year, and I don't know if Broadcom is the first of it.
I think it's interesting that all of us were not sure if you actually meant what you said or if you're just being completely
or said what you meant.
Meant the opposite of what you said, but I'm glad we clarified it.
There's a really good chance that if it is red tomorrow, that it opens up.
Okay, you agree?
Well, I'm just going to point out the absurdity of the semiconductor move. I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to get in the way of it until semiconductors stop outperforming the market massively. They're up 28% versus the S&P since January 4th. So they're up 42% on their own. They're up 28% against the S&P. This is extraordinary. I mean, if you look at the market overall, all of the move, and if you stripped out NVIDIA and Broadcom, but really AMD out of the NASDAQ, it's actually underperforming the S&P. It's all about semis right now. And I think this is something that's concerning. And at the same time, I'm not sure anybody knows what to do with it, including the analyst community who keep upgrading these stocks.
Fair points, fair points. So I know we spent a lot of time essentially saying whether or not NVIDIA has the power and those adjacent stocks, AI adjacent stocks, have the power to essentially levitate a space. That, I think, is what we're seeing. And I think those are the risks that both of these panelists are kind of underscoring. These companies here give you a bit more insight into the cyclicality that still exists within the semiconductor space.
Aren't we more to you than just panelists?
Like, brothers,
I feel like we've been doing this for so long. You know what I mean?
It's said with the utmost respect. I didn't know you got so sensitive about titles.
Yeah. When you're this sarcastic every night, I mean, like, come on.
It's probably a good time for a commercial.
I cannot tell. Just quickly on...
I think Broadcom at 25 times next year. I mean, the EPS beat was significant. The guide, people got concerned about the revenue guide for the year. I wouldn't be as concerned. It looks like an expensive stock because it's $1,400 a share. Valuation-wise, and we've said this for the last year and a half, it's actually one of the more reasonable ones out there.
All right, coming up, a move that will make your heart skip a beat. We will dig into the headlines sending this stock surging again today. That's next. Plus, Iron Mike is back, and this time he's on Netflix. Will the boxing champ deliver a knockout punch for the streamer? We'll slug that one out right after this break.
This is Fast Money with Melissa Lee, right here on CNBC.
You seek the key, but first, you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
Wouldn't it be great to have all your investment and retirement accounts in one place? Yahoo Finance, our sponsor today, makes it easy. I use it to put my investment account and 401k accounts into one hub and get expert tips that help me confidently manage my money. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. Whether you're a seasoned investor or are looking for that extra guidance, Yahoo Finance gives you all the tools and data you need in one place. They're the number one finance destination, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, customizable charts, and so much more. Securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including 401k and other investments. A comprehensive perspective is what sets apart great investors, and it's how Yahoo Finance ensures you have the insight to look at your wealth in its entirety. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Novo Nordisk stock surging 9% to a new record high after disclosing results of an obesity drug trial at its annual Capital Markets Day. Participants who took amycretin for 12 weeks lost 13% of their weight on average. The drug maker is also planning to expand research in cardiovascular disease and other obesity comorbidities. Competitor shares were broadly lower after this news, with Viking losing nearly 19%, Structure Therapeutics falling 10%, and Lilly closing flat on the day. What's important about this drug? It's an oral drug. It's a once-a-day drug. So presumably, it's easier to make. It's easier to transport. It's easier to take, et cetera. For your side effects, because the dosages on a daily basis will be lower. It's also proving to be as effective more effective, I should say, at 12 weeks versus Wegovy at 12 weeks. The weight loss is much more significant. So that's another key aspect to this particular drug.
Unbelievable, without question. Now it's a 600, but you add the two, Lilly and Novo together, we're probably approaching 1.4 trillion-ish in terms of market cap, which again, if you think revenues are going to grow the same way that a lot of analysts think they're going to grow, in other words, going from $50 billion now for an Eli Lilly to $150, $200 billion in the next 3.5, 4 years, as Dan would say, stay with it, have at it. If you think there's going to be some hiccup along the way, these stocks have gotten themselves a little extended. I mean, you can put up a Novo chart if you want proof positive and take a look. You did an amazing doc. I mean, big shot. Everybody should watch. But I think they would be surprised by, I think, the stock moves they've seen over the last few months.
Yeah, so you're talking about, like, nice round numbers. So $50 billion is the expected for Novo next year. Start looking at 2025. If you talk about supply-demand dynamics, we know that demand's going to be there forever. This helps the supply, all the different ways in which you can tape it, all the different uses. Start looking at 2025. It's trading about 33 times expected earnings growth at 20%, which is probably pretty low, you know. So, like, this is one of the things you can start looking at those out years. But when you have a gap up and up 10%, like that, I mean, you're going to look for opportunities on pullbacks. There haven't been too many of these, but if you go back and look at Novo, this thing consolidated for a good long time last year, and it kind of looks like the NVIDIA chart, the way it had that gap, consolidated another gap.
Yeah. What's interesting is to me that you're going to reward Novo on a day on a data release, you know, this flow data, because we're already kind of taking it as a given that they're so far out in front of everybody along with Lilly, and that it's now, you know, it's an addressable market call. It's a call about who's really out there, who's got the margin. And it's only presumed that they have this data. I mean, to me, is anybody questioning that they're not getting the follow through and they're not seeing actually some of the data that we got returned today? So I'm just kind of surprised that the market wants to continue to reward stuff I thought was in the price.
Lilly, by the way, also has an oral drug that is already in development, is actually farther along than Novo Nordisk. And so it's a little bit of a surprise to see the reaction, Lilly, considering that it does have something comparable already in the works, in the pipeline.
I think Tim kind of hit the nail on the head here in terms of a target addressable market. I think, you know, we already had those numbers baked in, those numbers meaning obesity-related and GLP-1-related obesity and diabetes-related drugs. Now, there are second and third order effects in terms of, I wouldn't be surprised to see strong correlation not only with heart disease, but stroke and several other, you know, maladies or ailments that come from, you know, the United States, which is the most obese developed country. So, you know, in terms of that, I think that's really why you're seeing, you know, people kind of flock into the stock. I'm with you there in terms of probably getting an opportunity to buy in cheaper, but it's like how much price appreciation will you watch from the sidelines before you gain some exposure?
Do not miss an interview with the Novo Nordisk CEO on Money Movers. That's tomorrow, 11 a.m. Eastern. Lars Fjordgaard Jorgensen. And speaking of weight loss drugs, if you missed the premiere last week of my documentary Big Shot, The Ozempic Revolution, it is available now on demand on CNBC.com and will be streaming on Peacock later this month. So look for it. There is a lot more Fast Money to come. Here's what's coming up next.
Get your gloves up. Mike Tyson is coming to Netflix, the streaming giant moving further into sports with its first ever boxing match. Will this big move deliver? We'll put on our mouth guards and slug it out next. Plus, the clock is ticking on TikTok as Washington looks to move ahead with a potential ban on China's control of ByteDance. What's next for the viral social media app and other Chinese companies in the U.S.? Coming up, you're watching Fast Money live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. We're back right after this.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Netflix coming out swinging, the streaming giant announcing an exclusive boxing mega event between legendary champ Iron Mike Tyson and YouTuber turned fighter Jake Paul. The two brawlers set to go head-to-head from the AT&T Stadium in Arlington, Texas on July 20th. The move just the latest push into both sports and live programming from Netflix, which recently reached a 10-year deal for the exclusive rights to stream WWE Raw starting in 2025. So could this be a knockout punch, one that Netflix absolutely needs?
Wow.
What?
That was nice. I mean, it was a nice pun. We love puns more than anybody. But I love hearing Mel talk about Iron Mike.
Well, that's, I like that.
Because
you were always a big Iron Mike fan. And when we were talking about Customato the other day, you got kind of nostalgic.
Well, we all know that actually he's watching right now.
Yeah.
This is an interesting strategy on the part of Netflix, I think. Instead of getting caught up in the sports bidding wars in terms of the rights, it's creating sports events that are more like entertainment. Exactly.
And this is
manufacturing it.
And I will watch. This is something that I would watch 100%.
You don't know how to stream.
Excuse me?
You don't know how to stream.
Well, there are drugs for that. But in terms of Netflix, I mean, they report in the middle of April. And you can go back and look. When it was cheap, we all pointed out, at 18 times, it's way too cheap. When this stock gets to about 31 times, and it's 29 now, then it gets a little ahead of itself. So this can continue to probably run and do this levitation. Mm-hmm. And I think collectively we've enjoyed Netflix for a while. But I'm telling you that 31 is sort of the line in the sand in terms of the multiple.
Yeah, I would say it's not just sports. You know, they launched this limited series with David Chang, who's obviously a celebrity chef. And, you know, he's been doing Ugly Delicious. It's called Dinner with David Chang live. They have celebrities come in. He's cooking for them. It's a conversation. There's comedians. There was like Bill Simmons, Seth Rogen and stuff like that.
Would anybody listen to that if we did that?
Yes. Like, I'm telling you, they're listening to our podcast live. I mean, they'd listen to it. Trust me. Like people want to hang out with people who are doing interesting stuff and talking about things they care about. And they want to be part of the thing. So, like, it's going across. It's not just sports. It's, like, a lot of, you know, like, personality-driven stuff, too. So I think that Netflix has got their finger on the pulse of this thing and getting away from some of the original content they've been doing for years.
I don't doubt Netflix's ability to generate organic content and be mindful and exhibit capital discipline in terms of where they're going to allocate money. Getting into these bidding wars for sports, I don't know, I mean, what your out year is in terms of what your return on investment is. Well, I'm with Guy, though. I do doubt whether or not paying 29, 30 times is the right price for that at this particular moment in time.
I hear that. But as somebody that thought Netflix was too expensive from $50 to $300, the time to buy Netflix is when it's expensive. And I also think that they have so many other levers to pull. We haven't even really talked about gaming and other types of add-on subscription dynamics that I think are maybe even bigger than all this. So I'm bullish on Netflix because, though, as Bono was talking about, the panelist to my left was talking
well
about
done.
That you have
well
the
done.
Free cash flow generation that is extraordinary. Thank you.
That's right.
Et tu, Brute?
Is the clock ticking on TikTok? The House is cracking down on China's ByteDance. Could it really be curtains for the viral social media app in the U.S.? It's coming up right after this. Plus, semis surging yet again today, and they are taking the rest of the market with them. What happens if this rally runs out of steam? What under-the-radar group might be ready for an even bigger breakout? We will find out next.
Missed a moment of Fast? Catch us anytime on the go. Follow the Fast Money Podcast. We're back right after this.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Stocks closing out yet another record day. The S&P and NASDAQ both touching new all-time highs, each up more than 1% on the day, while the Dow gained nearly 130 points. And in the midst of those big gains, Apple keeps on losing, down 7 straight days now, its longest losing streak since January 2022. NVIDIA, meantime, quickly closing in on passing Apple in market cap. Kroger hitting its highest levels in nearly 2 years. The grocery chain crushing EPS expectations before the bell. Today's gain is Kroger's biggest since 2021. And some after-hours action here. DocuSign surging on a big top and bottom line beat. Gap posting a beat of its own. And Costco dropping on a revenue miss. For a look at whether the market rally can continue, let's bring in BMO Wealth Management's Young Yu Ma. He is the firm's chief investment officer. Young Yu, great to have you with us.
Thanks, Melissa. Great to be here.
Do you think that there's some aspect of fragility to these market gains since they are being led by, you know, NVIDIA, basically, and obesity drug makers?
We wouldn't say fragility. We actually have been encouraged in the recent weeks that the market has expanded in terms of breadth and some of the small caps actually performing well. So we actually think the market health underneath the hood is actually improving and not weakening.
And you actually think small caps are poised for a good year. I mean, and you cite the election pattern that we've seen in the past.
Well, we know when Trump, President Trump was elected in 2016, there was a big run in small caps. A lot of the concern was that the tariffs that President Trump might enact would really disproportionately hurt the large caps, and small caps were the place to be. We think that there's at least a possibility that that could have a repeat of the dynamics that played out in 2016. And of course, small caps have lagged the large caps for so long here. We think they're actually due for somewhat of a catch-up trade here.
Young, you have a PhD in finance. I do not. Buybacks will be a topic of conversation. What are your, what are your thoughts on buybacks? I have no issue with them whatsoever. I'm sure you probably don't as well. That will be something that has a bullseye as well tonight. Thoughts?
Buybacks probably will have a bullseye. It'll probably get discussed at tonight's State of the Union address, actually. Buybacks, we think, are very important for the market. They're one of the two forms of returning capital to shareholders. Of course, the other one being dividends. And buybacks are actually a very efficient form of returning capital to shareholders because investors can themselves determine whether or not they want to sell shares and be subject to taxes as opposed to dividends, which are taxed upon receipt. But let's be clear, if there is an increase in taxes on buybacks, again, that's a very big if getting from here to policy on that. But if that were to happen, that's a tax on investors. And that's all investors, investors with 401ks, investors with pensions. Ultimately, it's the investors that will pay that tax and not the corporation. So we think that's important to keep in mind. And we actually do favor buybacks as a very important way to return capital to shareholders.
Young, in the last couple of weeks, we've seen the dollar sell off a couple percent. We've seen yields in the 10-year come in 20 basis points. Talk about the sort of tailwind that might exist for the stock market right now as economic data it's okay and the earnings environment seems pretty good too.
Yeah, data's okay. It's a little bit choppy here. The market's shown an amazing resilience to look past some of the choppy data last month's inflation. The inflation data that came out last month was a bit mixed as well. The strong dollar plays into it. That helps to keep inflation down. But overall, we think at a big picture level, the market's really looking past the near term and focusing on what we think will be increasing growth in the second half of the year and the trends of improving productivity, which really allows the market to kind of have its cake and eat it too, to get higher growth and to also get inflation down. So right now, the market's showing amazing resilience. We actually think that will persist for some time here.
Young Yu, great to see you. Thank you. Young Yu Ma of BMO. What do you think about small caps here? How does that set up for you?
I don't care about small caps.
Okay.
I don't really invest in them. I just think we spend a lot too much time talking about it. I don't mean to be disrespectful, and that was a totally fair question. I think when I look for the opportunities in the market, small caps are a barometer of sorts, and there's no question that that is probably why I think more people look at them, and I think that they're supposed to outperform during periods of growth. What I thought was interesting about what he said is he doesn't think sentiment is offsides. Mm-hmm. He thinks that sentiment is actually fine. And what's interesting is we came into this year yet again, people feel like the market was over its skis, especially certain sectors, and we've gone even well past where we thought we could be at the start of the year. So if people actually think sentiment is now okay, that's probably time to get worried, because the market's been worried about positioning, worried about macro, worried about the Fed for a year and a half, and look what's happened.
The contra indicator. So I'll take a stab at small caps for my digs or digi or whatever my panelists approve of here. Listen, I think that the argument for them is that we've seen economic robustness that we thought was really going to be challenged, and that they're going to tend to do well in that type of environment. Mm. I have been shocked, and I've used the term with you begrudgingly, but the data is the data, and we continue to defy the odds in terms of being able to, one, the consumer spending front continue to be robust, and the 3.75 reading in terms of Q4 GDP still continues to show that we're chugging along.
Right. Coming up, is the clock about to strike midnight on TikTok? One House committee just taking a major step in cracking down on the Chinese-owned app, even as some politicians are using it themselves. More on that
next.
What's
going on in that picture? Sorry.
It's like a fox. And an electric unveiling. Rivian debuting its new small SUV as cost-cutting pressure revs up. But will the new wheels be enough? We are plugging into that one when Fast Money returns. Welcome back to Fast Money. Time may be running out for TikTok. Earlier this afternoon, the House Energy and Commerce Committee unanimously voted to approve a bill that would crack down on the popular social media company. CNBC's Emily Wilkins has got the details. Emily. Hey, Melissa. Well, yeah, that controversial bill could lead to TikTok being blocked in the U.S. has cleared its first hurdle now, getting bipartisan support from the Energy and Commerce Committee. Now, the bill is now poised to head to the House floor with Speaker Mike Johnson endorsing the bill this morning as an important bipartisan measure to take on China, our largest geopolitical foe, which is actively undermining our economy and security. And we actually just heard from House Majority Leader Steve Scalise that that bill will be on the floor next week. Now, of course, there have been previous efforts to ban TikTok, and they have failed. But supporters of the bill say that this is not a ban and that TikTok can continue to be in the U.S. so long as it divests from its parent company, ByteDance. Chairwoman Kathy McMorris-Rogers, who heads the Energy and Commerce panel, said the legislation doesn't ban free speech but addresses potential threats from China.
This bill is focusing on national security threats that are owned and controlled by a foreign adversary. It does not get into the content that's on that application.
A survey of members that was done in October of last year found only about 7% of lawmakers have a TikTok, although not all of them were verified and some hadn't posted in months. Now, of course, President Joe Biden got on TikTok last month, but don't expect that to hold up the legislation. A National Security Council spokesperson said the administration has worked with lawmakers on the bill, and Biden is urging lawmakers to pass it through both the House and the Senate. Melissa?
All right. Emily, thank you. Emily Wilkins in D.C. for us. Interesting that President Biden would use TikTok, or at least his campaign would, when it's a national security threat, which seems to be a little bit ironic. But here we are. What could this mean? I mean, this could potentially be a very good thing for a Meta.
Meta. I mean, at times, and when Meta was at a multiple half of where it is today, those were the things that we thought Meta needed. I don't know that Meta's future is determined one way or another here. We've proven, and if anything, Meta is showing where they are actually using both AI, and Instagram is still way out ahead. I do think it gets back to the China rhetoric that's out there. Everywhere you turn, China is a bipartisan issue. Every sector, and therefore, what does it mean for those companies here that are relying upon Chinese revenues and Chinese growth? It doesn't bode well.
Well, one of those companies is Meta. And there was an article in the Wall Street Journal this morning talking about Temu, right? We all learned about Temu the last two Super Bowls. Guys shop like a billionaire. Mel does it, right? They lose $7 on like almost every sale. They were the largest advertiser, I think, on Meta in the U.S. and Google. And if you think about it, if there is going to be this sort of bipartisan groundswell towards kind of shutting some of these operations down, that will also have an effect on their ad revenue here in the U.S.
Coming up, Rivian's new ride, the latest offering from the EV maker, and how they are hoping it will ease the pressure to cut prices. The details next. More Fast Money in two. Welcome back to Fast Money. Rivian unveiling its new R2 and R3 cars at a splashy event in Laguna Beach today. The stock has been trading near all-time lows since the company gave weak guidance in February, but it is up 13%+ on today's news. It also got initiated with a buy rating over at Jefferies, so will share continue to rev higher? CNBC's Phil LeBeau is in California with the very latest. Hey, Phil.
Hey, Melissa, three pieces of news here today. Let's start first off with the R2, which was billed on the marquee of this historic theater as the big reveal of the day. And it was the big reveal of the day. People have been looking forward to seeing this midsize SUV. It's going to be starting at about $45,000. That's not the exact price, but that's what they're targeting at this point. And more importantly, they're pulling forward production. It was always scheduled to come out in 2026. They believe it'll come out in the first half of 2026. And now they're pulling forward production because they're going to be building it at the Rivian plant in Normal, Illinois.
We're so excited about this vehicle. We wanted to get it into market as fast as possible. And we'll still be building these in our plant in Georgia, but we're going to first launch them out of our facility in Illinois. And what that gets us is an ability to get it to market quicker, and it saves us well over $2 billion in capital in the process of launching.
You heard R.J. Scaringe mention the $2 billion in capital. That's the second piece of news here. They are pausing development of the plant that they are building in Georgia. Now, they're not scrapping it. They plan on eventually building out that plant, although an opening is to be determined. The target at this point is by 2030 to have about 7,500 employees at that plant. But when you can save 2.25 in capital expenditure in this market with questions about liquidity, that's another reason why the stock moved higher. And finally, there is the question of where is Rivian going when it comes to production and growth. And as you take a look at the deliveries over the last couple of years, we know that the production guide is for 57,000 vehicles this year. But beyond that, they're going to be coming out with the R3. And this was the surprise that nobody was expecting. This is going to be a crossover utility vehicle. It'll be priced lower than the R2. Exactly when it comes out in 26 or 27 remains to be seen. But this is Rivian saying, Melissa, as you take a look at shares of Rivian, this is Rivian saying, we're doing two things here. One, we're giving you a roadmap for our products. And two, we are moving as quickly as possible to lower our costs, to get to gross positive profit margins by Q4. Mm-hmm. Three big pieces of news, and that's the reason the stock moved higher. Melissa?
All right. Phil, thank you. Phil LeBeau in Laguna Beach for us today. The question is, if they build it, will people buy in this kind of market? Dan? R
and Zebra.
And Zebra is, yeah, Rivian.
I mean, really quickly. I mean, it's trading at all-time lows. I think the key point there is, RJ just said, they will lose $2 billion less than they're expected. They have $9 billion in cash. I mean, expect them to continue to dilute shareholders and raise cash. I mean, but this thing's going to survive. And I just think about it. Think about Tesla maybe 10 years ago.
As the Jefferies note said, I mean, this is as close to Tesla as you're going to get. So, yeah, they lose money hand over fist. This was $130-something stock, and so it's come down to levels where at least you can make a rational decision based on some of the things you see going forward. But I still think this is a fade.
Up next, final trades. Time for the final trade. Panelist over there.
Oh, is that me? Hi, my name's Tim. I'm panelist number one, and I'm going with A-Mark. This is a $650 million gold dealer. I'm actually long the name, full disclosure, but I think they have a lot of operational leverage in a gold bull market.
Panelist to my right.
Clearly, the chatter around buybacks might be a dark cloud hanging over them. However, I think they're still under own. Exelite Energy.
You over there.
Yeah. Hi, Bono, and I'm Dan.
Wow.
By the way, I mean, Guy, he put together this little acronym. Is that what you do when you put the Lockheed Martin in your clan? It's starting to look interesting to me. Yeah.
You like his clan?
Yeah.
Interesting.
You know, Mel.
Part of the clan. No,
I know one,
sorry, clan.
And one of your heartbreaks was not getting into Georgetown. Tim and I obviously did. We have members of the Georgetown Entertainment Media Alliance there. Take a look at Valero, Melms.
Thanks for watching Fast Money. See you back here tomorrow at 5 for more Fast Mad Money starts right now.
All opinions expressed by the Fast Money participants are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, their parent company or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by them on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed on this podcast as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of an opinion. Such opinions are based upon information the Fast Money participants consider reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Fast Money disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/fastmoneydisclaimer.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.